You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, quiet on the set.
Camera speed.
Sound production, take one.
Action!
Welcome to From Beneath the Hollywood Sign. If you love old movies, Hollywood history, or the golden age of filmmaking, you've come to the right place. This is the podcast that talks about amazing stories of Tinseltown from another era. Hear fascinating conversations with writer-producer Steve Kubine, who quite literally lives just beneath the Hollywood Sign, and actress-writer Nan McNamara. Now your hosts, Steve and Nan.
Welcome, everyone. I'm very excited about today's episode because, you know, as of course, last month we started our Star of the Month.
Yes.
And so we're going to continue that tradition.
In April. It's already April.
It's April already. We're keeping it in the family because, of course, our first Star of the Month was Paul Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
Our Star of the Month for April is the real-life wife of Paul Douglas, the fantastic actress Jan Sterling.
I love the quote that you have in the original blog. She says, "I was the original happy hooker. I've played her in 10 of my 42 movies, and I've played her on television and on the stage." And she has such an interesting background, very different than what she plays on screen.
Exactly. You know, she really made a name for herself playing these cheap floozies and hard-edged dames and
right.
The film fatales. She often danced on the shadier side of the street.
She did, yes.
You know, to me, she ranked right up there with Gloria Graham and Audrey Totter and Marie Windsor as one of cinema's best bad girls. She always played the ruthless, scheming dame who was up to no good at all times. But she also had this tender, touching side to her that was quite lovely. So we're going to talk about her life, her career, and all that good stuff.
So Jan Sterling is actually from a family who were descendants of Presidents John Adams and John Quincy Adams.
And a very different from the sort of tramps and tough-talking dames she normally played.
Yes.
She was from a very prominent Manhattan family.
Right, right. She was educated in some of the finest private schools. Her parents got divorced. Her mother remarried someone even wealthier. They moved abroad. She lived in Brazil and London and Paris, and they had private tutors, and she ended up attending Faye Compton's Dramatic School, right?
Yeah.
Before returning to Manhattan at 17 with a very strong British accent, which I totally get. You grow up in those other parts of the world.
Of course you're going to pick up the accent. She started out, she used the stage name Jane Sterling, and she made her Broadway debut in January of 1938 in a comedy called Bachelor Born. It was a hit. It ran for a year. Really got some experience under her belt, and really she kind of got her sea legs as far as being on the stage.
Right, right. And she went on to do other plays as well, When We Were Married, The Rugged Path, which actually starred Spencer Tracy, and Noel Coward's Present Laughter.
Yes, which starred Clifton Webb at the time.
So she's doing really well.
She's a Broadway gal. You know, she really got, she cut her teeth on the Broadway stage, which I always have a deep appreciation for.
I do too. How did she end up getting to Hollywood and starring in her first film?
Well, I think anybody who causes a sensation on Broadway, Hollywood courts you.
Right.
I mean, they come after you. And I think that's what happened with Jan Sterling. They saw the potential, and of course, they wanted her in movies.
So in 1947, she makes her film debut. It's a small role in a romantic drama called Tycoon. But it stars John Wayne and Lorraine Day.
Yeah, which are people she'll co-star later in a very important movie in her career, which we'll get to that.
Right.
But, you know, by this time, she's dropped the Jane Sterling, and she's going to be really exotic, and she's going to be called Jan Sterling.
Well, and that starts her on a road of, she books
yes.
a huge, wonderful part.
Oh, she's so good in this movie.
The Warner Brothers film, Johnny Belinda, she has a supporting role, and it's the film that Jane Wyman won her Academy Award for.
Yeah, where Jane Wyman, she plays this deaf mute who has to deal with a pregnancy due to rape. It was a very controversial and very cutting-edge movie at the time. It was directed by the great Gene Negulesco, who was kind of known mostly for lighter fare movies like How to Marry a Millionaire and Three Coins in a Fountain, but this was a real change of pace for him. The movie also starred Lou Ayres and Charles Bickford and Agnes Moorehead, who were also Oscar nominated, the three
for
of
the
them.
Film.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Jan, she has this showy role of Stella McCormick, who's the wife of Jane Wyman's rapist, played by Stephen McNally.
Okay.
And Jan's character is faced with this moral dilemma. Do I protect my husband or do I do the right thing and come forward?
Right.
And it's just, it's a really skillful performance, and she's so good in it.
So she, as you said, has a huge success with that. But rather than taking advantage of that and capitalizing on it, she decides to return to New York.
Yeah, she ended up going back
Broadway,
to
baby.
Broadway, which I guess that was probably her first love.
And she appeared as a replacement
yes.
in Born Yesterday, which we've talked about in the Paul Douglas episode.
Yeah, which is funny because that original version of Born Yesterday had made a star out of Paul Douglas, who she would soon marry.
Right.
So, and they didn't appear together on this run, but they did get to appear together in a run of Born Yesterday, which is cool.
Yeah, that's very, very cool.
Yeah.
She heads back to Hollywood, right?
Yes.
But it's a little bit of a struggle to get back to the place of Johnny Belinda.
Yeah, I think the momentum was gone a little bit after Johnny Belinda when she went to Broadway instead of continuing in Hollywood.
Right.
So, you know, she's appearing in some pretty unspectacular movies. With the exception there, she has a really great role in a 1950 prison drama, a women's prison drama called Caged.
Yes.
Which starred Eleanor Parker.
I love her character's name, Smoochie.
Smoochie. I know she plays, it's a pretty cool role. And Smoochie is, she's sort of a tough bleach blonde.
She's got to be with a name like that.
Yeah, but she's the one who first tells the other girls that Eleanor Parker's character is okay. She's
oh,
like,
okay.
Yeah, this kid's okay.
She's fine.
She's
Leave her
us.
Alone.
Which
yeah.
is instrumental in Eleanor's survival in women's prison.
Of course, of course. Like very early in Eleanor Parker's career.
Yeah. But, you know, other than that, you know, she has a second lead role with Alan Ladd and Phyllis Calvert in this forgettable crime drama called Appointment with Danger. And she's in this movie called The Skipper Surprises His Wife with Robert Walker and Joan Leslie. It's a forgettable
okay.
movie. But she's in another good movie in 1951 called The Mating Season, and she's really fun as the ex-girlfriend of Gene Tierney's husband, played by John Lund, but she's completely overshadowed by Thelma Ritter, as is everybody in that movie.
Yeah, right. That makes sense. Now, shortly after that, in 1950,
yes.
she and Paul Douglas end up getting married.
Yes, they do. They, you know, I'm not sure how they met, but to me, it's like, well, Hollywood, isn't it just one big green room?
Right.
Like, everybody knows everybody. So
right.
she ends up meeting Paul Douglas. They get married. It was a second marriage for her, because she had married pretty young to an actor named John Merivale.
In the 40s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Paul Douglas and Jan are married. They have a son. And in the 1950s, they finally appear in Born Yesterday together.
Yes,
and
finally.
They take it out on the road.
I know. It was very successful. I think it was fun for people to see the real life couple, you know,
yes,
playing these
yes.
great characters. To me, I think Jan Sterling's big break came when Billy Wilder, the masterful director that he is, cast her in a role that I think sort of defines her screen persona. It's a 1951 movie called Ace in the Hole, and it's this powerful, sort of cynical film about the press and the ruthless measures that the press takes to get stories and get ratings and things like that. It's sort of a precursor to movies we've seen in the 80s
right.
and 90s that to kind of cover that topic.
So Kirk Douglas plays an unscrupulous news reporter.
So unscrupulous. He's terrible. Which is kind of fun to see Kirk Douglas play such a kind of slimy reporter.
Yeah. And she plays the wife of a miner who's trapped in, in a mine that has caved in.
Yeah, because the whole thing is about this mine explosion and miners are trapped. And of course, the
press is there.
Comes out. And, and he really will do anything to get the story, including seducing the wife of the trapped miner.
Okay.
So, you know, it's good. It's a good drama, but it's a little soapy, a little sexy. But it really has a kind of powerful message about the press.
I'm grabbing the early bus.
Where to?
Out of here, fast. As far as 11 bucks will take me. I'm blowing this place.
You picked a fine time.
I've left him before. Once I got as far as Dodge City, Kansas, and a big blue convertible to stop by for gas. It must have cost $4,000 easy. But Leo caught up with me. I told him I was through. I told him it was no good anymore. This isn't for me. You know what he told me? He told me he had 160 acres in New Mexico and a big business. Look at it. We sell 8 hamburgers a week and a case of soda pop and once in a while a Navajo rug, maybe.
He married you, didn't he? Brought you out here, fed you, nursed you.
And I thanked him plenty. I've been thanking him for 5 years. That makes us even. So long, Jack.
Now, it's one of her best performances, but the film doesn't do very well.
Surprisingly, it didn't do well at the box office. The critics didn't particularly love it. But to me, it's such a great role for her. It's such an important role for her. And it definitely is worth seeing. Ace in the Hole, it should have propelled her to stardom, but for whatever reason, it didn't.
Mm-hmm. She does go on to star in leading roles in other films, but they're not films that are really taking her career to the next level.
No. She starred, and we've talked about this silly comedy. She's in Rhubarb, about the feral cat played by Orangey from
Orangey.
Breakfast at Tiffany's, which stars Ray Milland. She's in that. She's in a movie about a tormented deaf boxer called Flesh and Fury with
Tony Curtis
in 1952. Again, she plays the bad girl, which is sort of her thing now. She's in some other forgettable westerns like Split Second and a second-rate film noir with Stephen McNally, who we just talked about, from Johnny Belinda, who played her husband, called Pony Express. Yeah, it's just she's not getting the role she probably should at this point in her career.
Right. In 1953, she plays one of her many prostitutes. I think you noted that, or ex-prostitute, in a Civil War story called The Vanquished.
The Vanquished, yes, which I've never seen. I'd actually kind of like to see that one. One of the reasons I want to see it is because it reunites John Payne and Colleen Gray,
who
were so good in Nightmare Alley, the original. So I kind of would like to see what they do with this reteaming.
And then she goes on to play opposite Robert Ryan in a drama called Alaska Seas. He's a fisherman in Alaska.
Which, again, I've never seen it, but I would love to see Jan Sterling's chemistry with Robert Ryan.
Yeah.
I think they're both similar types.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting. So finally, we get to a film that is really worthy of her.
It is. It's the great 1954 film, The High and the Mighty. She has a really great role. And she, for this particular film, she won the Golden Globe for her performance. And she was nominated for a Best Supporting Actress Oscar, but she unfortunately lost to Eva Marie Saint for her performance in On the Waterfront. It's a really great movie. It's all about passengers on an airplane, but it's not a disaster movie per se. It's more of a, well, maybe a little bit, but it's all about the relationships and really kind of a soap opera in the air. But it's good. It's so good. I think we mentioned earlier Claire Trevor's in it, who's also could play the bad girl like nobody's business.
Right.
It's got a great cast. Lorraine Day, we mentioned earlier, is in it. And of course, John Wayne and Robert Stack and Paul Kelly, who we've done an entire episode about Paul Kelly.
Right, right. I think before we continue to discuss Jan Sterling's career, let's share with our listeners this week's Hollywood Pop Quiz.
All right, the pop quiz question of the day, and it's very personal for me because it's going to be about Jan Sterling, but it's about one of my favorite Jan Sterling performances, and it's a movie from 1961. I'm going to have you guess the movie. It stars teen idols Fabian and Tommy Sands, and also stars the Queen of Star Trek, Majel Barrett, who, of course, Trekkies know, played Nurse Chapel in the original and was married to the series creator Gene Roddenberry. What was the movie?
Oh, that's a good one. All right, we'll be back with the answer to that and more about Jan Sterling after this.
Let Mysteries at Midnight be your destination for detective whodunits and captivating mystery stories. You'll hear classic stories like Sherlock Holmes, Agatha Christie's Poirot, and short tales from H.G. Wells, Charles Dickens, Edgar Allan Poe, and others. I'm Christopher, and I read these classic stories in the soothing style of a bedtime story, so you can listen to them in bed when you drift off to sleep. I also host the number one sleep podcast in the world called Sleep Cove, where millions drift off to meditations, hypnosis, and bedtime stories. We soon realized that listeners wanted to hear our mystery stories all in one place, so we created Mysteries at Midnight, where you can listen to all new tales every week. Search for Mysteries at Midnight on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app, and follow and subscribe so you don't miss out on new episodes. So why don't you pick a story now? And can you guess the twist?
Throughout history, royals across the world were notorious for incest. They married their own relatives in order to consolidate power and keep their blood blue. But they were oblivious to the havoc all this inbreeding was having on the health of their offspring. From Egyptian pharaohs marrying their own sisters to the Habsburgs' notoriously oversized lower jaws. I explore the most shocking incestuous relationships and tragically inbred individuals in royal history. And that's just episode one. On the History Tea Time podcast, I profile remarkable queens and LGBTQ plus royals, explore royal family trees, and delve into women's medical history and other fascinating topics. I'm Lindsay Holiday, and I'm spilling the tea on history. Join me every Tuesday for new episodes of the History Tea Time podcast, wherever fine podcasts are enjoyed.
Steve and Ann will be right back, but first, another stop on the Hollywood tour. One of the most iconic scenes in film is in one of Hollywood's best movies ever, that famous burning of Atlanta scene in 1939's Gone with the Wind. How did they create that much flame? Easy, they just burned stuff they didn't need anymore. They actually took old sets from movies shot years before. They burned old sets and backdrops from King Kong, released in 1933, The Last of the Mohicans from 1936, and Little Lord Fauntleroy, also from 1936. The fire cost over $25,000. It yielded almost 2 hours of footage, and it was so intense, Culver City residents jammed the phone lines thinking MGM was actually burning down. Something else most people never knew, those iconic shots of Scarlett O'Hara watching it all burn, well, they actually used a stunt double. Why? Because Vivian Leigh wouldn't even be cast for another month. And now back to Steve and Nan from Beneath the Hollywood Sign.
Welcome back, everyone. Before we get further into the life of Jan Sterling, we'd like to acknowledge our listener of the week. And this one is coming from down under. And our listener of the week is the wonderful Peta Emson. Peta wrote us recently that she was recovering from a broken ankle and has been listening to our podcast as sort of a healing device.
That's so wonderful. Thank you, Peta.
Thank
we
you,
hope
Peta.
It's made your healing speedy.
Yes. And also, Peta asked us if we would do an story about the lovely, tragic Gail Russell.
Oh.
Which she's on our short list. So
okay.
Stay tuned, Peta.
Good. Wonderful. All right. So where we left off, Jan Sterling has just completed The High and the Mighty, right?
Yes, The High and the Mighty. You know, she's married Paul Douglas. She's done The High and the Mighty, which has really raised her profile in Hollywood.
Right.
One of the cool things that she did around this same time, she and Paul Douglas appeared together as themselves on the Milton Berle Show.
Oh!
TV show in 1954, and they play a sort of a quarreling, bickering version of themselves, which is really funny. You can see it on YouTube, and it's a lot of fun to see. You can kind of see the chemistry they had together.
Sure.
And it's Milton Berle, so it's very cool.
Yeah.
Around that time, she also went back to prison.
She did. It was interesting that she did a couple of prison
she
films.
She did. She was drawn to that women's prison genre.
Well, and it's such a, especially in the 50s, it's just
they were
classic.
So in vogue then. You know, in 1955, she did Woman's Prison. It kind of seemed like it was recovering old territory for her, but it was good. She played the hardened ringleader of the prisoners, and they take this naive new prisoner, played by Phyllis Thaxter, sort of under their wing,
right,
as they lock horns with the cruel warden. There's always a cruel warden, but this one was deliciously played by Ida Lupino.
I can just see Ida Lupino playing that cruel warden.
Oh, Ida did not take prisoners in that movie. And it's really a fun movie. It's kind of a soapy take on women behind bars, but was such a genre that I think people sort of make fun of now. But they were good. I loved them.
Yeah, and it's kind of a cult classic,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's definitely a cult classic.
Yeah.
You know, it had a great supporting cast, too. Audrey Totter's in it. Cleo Moore, if people know about Cleo Moore, she was sort of a Marilyn Monroe wannabe who was from Louisiana. And she married Huey Long's son, who, of course, Huey Long is who the great movie All the King's Men is based on.
Right.
And actually, Cleo Moore, if I'm not mistaken, ended up running for governor of Louisiana sometime in the, 70s.
Okay.
She lost. But interesting woman, Cleo Moore. And it also starred Ida Lupino's then husband, Howard Duff, who played her love interest.
So that same year, she's in a kind of another melodrama, Female on the Beach.
Oh, but it's so trashy. It's good.
It stars Joan Crawford.
Our girl Joan Crawford.
All right.
And it really is such a fun, over-the-top, campy movie. Our girl Joan is starting to age a little bit, but she falls in love with this hunky beach boy gigolo played by Jeff Chandler.
Yes.
Who may or may not want to kill her.
For her money, I bet.
Exactly. And Jan Sterling, she plays this jealous real estate agent who's secretly in love with Jeff Chandler. And who wouldn't be in love with Jeff Chandler?
Right, right.
But to me, the movie is completely stolen by Cecil Kellaway and our girl Natalie Schaefer, who play these older grifters who basically are Jeff Chandler's pimps.
Okay.
They're the ones who set him up with these wealthy women to take advantage of.
Oh, my gosh. Those two together.
Oh, they eat the scenery up.
So she gives another great performance in a Humphrey Bogart film.
And it's a good performance. It's a thankless role.
Mm-hmm.
It's the
like
wife.
The wife.
The movie's The Harder They Fall, which people will probably know. It's this brutal boxing drama. And she's really good in it. You know, it also starred Rod Steiger and Mike Lane. And it was, I think it was Humphrey Bogart's final film performance.
Okay.
Yeah. So again, his swan song.
He died a year after the film was released.
Yeah.
But that same year, she makes the film version of the George Orwell novel, 1984.
Yes, which I've actually never seen.
I've never seen it either.
I'd love to see it.
It would be very interesting in today's lens to see what they did with it.
To see how they handled that.
Yeah.
You know, that one starred Edmund O'Brien, another favorite of mine, Barefoot Contessa, he's so great in. Michael Redgrave, an earlier film of his.
Right.
And Sterling plays Edmund O'Brien's ill-fated wife, Julia, in that one.
Okay. By the late 50s, she is starting to take on some television roles and guest starring in some of the popular shows of the day, including Playhouse 90, The Loretta Young Show, Kraft Theater, and she still pops into films every once in a while.
She does. In 1958, she's in, and this is a really fun, again, it's kind of trashy and kind of wonderful. But
I think we're getting a sense of your taste.
But I think it's what was happening in terms of films of the late 50s, too.
Yes.
They were getting a little trashy, a little fun, a little soapy. And this one's called The Female Animal.
Mm.
And it marked also Hedy Lamarr's final film.
Oh, wow.
So I think Jan Sterling was like a career killer.
Yes.
Like
everybody was.
She's in all these movies, which become the final films of these great stars.
Wow. Wow. Kathy O, in 1958, she stars in with Dan Duryea, who we've talked about before, and Patty McCormick.
Which actually, well, first of all, Kathy O is a really great movie.
Is it? Okay.
And
I haven't seen that one
either. Patty McCormick plays Kathy O, and Kathy O is this child star who's misunderstood, and you can imagine. And she's kind of a brat, but she's really not. She just wants attention.
Okay.
And it's a really good movie.
Great?
She's great in it.
Yeah.
And this was, she made this after, of course, The Bad Seed, which is what made her famous.
Yes.
And, Patty, I know Patty, and Patty is a fan of our show.
Oh, that's so exciting.
I would love to get Patty on here as a guest.
That
so that's my goal.
That would be wonderful.
Yes.
What a thrill that would be to talk with her.
I'm sure the story she must us have about being a child actress.
Yes.
In that era with all those great stars.
Yeah. Another film that Jan does, which I'm also seeing a pattern here of a lot of these films, they've become kind of cult classics.
Cult classics, yes.
This is High School Confidential in 1959 with Russ Tamblyn, who we all know from West Side Story. Among
right.
many other things.
He plays this cop who goes undercover as a high school kid, which is just
it's
funny.
Such
it's
a
like,
great,
what
yeah.
was it? 21 Jump Street. It's
yes,
very 21 Jump
right,
Street.
Right, right.
But it's just kind of teen exploitation movie, and it unleashed Mamie Van Doren onto the world, which is a thing in and of itself,
right.
if you ask me. But, you know, Mamie was great.
Oh, wow. Now, in 1959, tragedy strikes
yes.
Jan Sterling's life when her beloved husband, Paul Douglas, dies of a heart attack. And we've talked about that in
yes.
his episode.
Yeah.
It was very shocking, and it really sort of marked a decline in her career of choice, I'm
yeah.
assuming.
Yeah, I think once Paul Douglas died, I think she lost her passion and her desire to be a film actress. I think she was so incredibly hurt by his death that
of
it
course.
Really changed the trajectory of her career.
Right.
The 60s roll in, and there's very few leading lady roles coming her way. So it definitely slows down by her choice and probably by just the choice of a woman getting older in Hollywood, I hate
right.
to say it.
Right.
But she did appear on television quite a bit. You know, she did Riverboat and Wagon Train and Bonanza, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Burke's Law, and even Mannix with good old Mike Connors and Gail Fisher.
Wow.
Which I loved.
Yeah. And she makes her singing debut in Cole Porter's Silk Stockings.
Yeah. Who knew she could sing?
She can do it all. She has a supporting role in a crime thriller called The Incident with a pretty great cast.
Great cast.
Young and up and coming cast, including Martin Sheen and Beau Bridges and Brock Peters.
Yes. And Tony Musante. Does everybody remember Tony
Musante?
I don't
remember Tony Musante.
He was this great actor from the 70s who had his own series for a while called Toma. That was it. It was a cop drama.
Pulled it out.
But he was this sort of New York Italian guy and was just great. I loved it.
Okay. She also returns to Broadway in two shows that close pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But because of her time in New York, she is then cast in daytime soap opera, The Guiding Light.
Yes, she did the soap opera thing, which was probably a big deal for a show like The Guiding Light to get a film star like Jan
I would
Sterling.
Imagine. And it's sort of, I've always pictured it like a theater company in a way. You know,
yeah.
you have to learn lines every day.
Every night, new lines.
Yeah, yeah, you've got your family there. She closes out the decade in 1969 with a low-budget drama called The Minx.
The Minx. Yes.
And it's about three prostitutes who who turn the tables on their Johns, and they use some blackmail tactics.
These guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and surprisingly, Jan Sterling does not play a prostitute in this one. You would think after a career of playing these prostitutes, she was a given, but she ends up playing the wife of one of the men who's blackmailed
this
one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, small part, but kind of fun movie.
In the late 60s, she moves to London for a time. She returns to the States in the 70s, and she becomes involved with actor-director Sam Wanamaker.
Yes, which was an important part of her life for mm-hmm. sure. He became her next love. They never married, but they were definitely partners. I'm glad she found love a second time.
Yes, and she is all over the TV.
Oh,
in that
all your favorite
period.
Shows growing up. You know, Little House on the Prairie, Kung Fu, Three's Company, The Incredible Hulk. Jan Sterling is in it.
Yeah, Medical Center.
Yeah.
She's also in a popular TV movie, Having Babies, from 1976 with Desi Arnaz Jr.
And Adrienne Barbeau.
Yeah.
Who could forget those two?
Right.
You know, and she also is in the acclaimed miniseries Backstairs at the White House from 1979. She plays First Lady Lou Hoover.
Okay. I don't remember that.
I remember that.
She appears as Walter Matthau's wife in First Monday in October.
Yes.
Also starring Jill Clayburgh.
She's very good in that role. That's actually it's a nice little showy piece for her.
She makes her final TV appearance on Baby Boom, 1988, with Kate Jackson.
Yes, our good old Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, taking over for the Diane Keaton role from
Absolutely.
The film.
Absolutely. And that show co-starred her partner, Sam Wanamaker.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Which I love they got to work together.
Yeah. So Sam Wanamaker passes away in 1993, And Jan Sterling pretty much retires.
She does. I don't think she really appears in public much after his death, except she did in 2001, and I would have given my eye teeth to have been there.
Yeah.
She made a very rare appearance at Cinecon Film Festival that year. And at 80, from people who were there, she was just as engaging and charming as she'd ever been on film.
Yeah, that was in 2001.
Yeah, would have loved to have seen her there.
2 years later, in 2003, tragically, their son Adams passes away from heart failure, which leads me to believe that there was some sort of hereditary issue there that was passed on
with
to
Paul,
his son.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, that was the end for Jan Sterling.
Of course.
I think once her son Adams died, I don't think she had much will left to live. And a year later, March 26, 2004, she suffered ill health for quite a while. She's broken her hip. She passes away at the Motion Picture and Television Hospital in Woodland Hills at 83.
Wow. What a career. And again, I've said this before, I love being able to bring people like Jan Sterling to the attention of those of us that may not know her wonderful work.
Yeah, because if you don't know her work, you really should check out some of these movies. She was an important part of movie history and definitely left an indelible mark, I think, in our history.
We will list some of the must-see films of Jan Sterling in our notes. And you can find those on YouTube.
Yes.
And you can also find them in the description of our podcast. I think it's time for the answer to our Hollywood pop quiz.
Yes, and this one's so great. The question was, it's one of my favorite Jan Sterling movies, and it starred teen idol Fabian, Tommy Sands, and Majel Barrett from Star Trek. It's from 1961. What is the movie?
Okay, I have no guess.
It's a fantastic, and by fantastic, I mean probably awful, but I loved it, movie called Love in a Goldfish Bowl.
I love the title.
Oh, it's really fun. It's all about college antics. And yeah, well, you have to see it. I don't want to spoil it.
We will look for that.
Yes.
And we would love it if you would follow us on social media. Our handle is at From Beneath the Hollywood Sign. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. We'll give you updates on future shows. You can also watch us on YouTube. We would love it if you would subscribe to YouTube and to our social media as well.
And we'd love to hear from you. You guys have been writing some really great emails to us. Keep them coming. You can contact us at info@frombeneaththehollywoodsign.com.
That's this week's View.
From Beneath the Hollywood Sign.
You've been listening to From Beneath the Hollywood Sign with Steve Kubine and Nan McNamara, the podcast that celebrates amazing stories of Tinseltown from its golden era. Join us next week for another episode and learn something else about Hollywood you probably never knew. Take a moment and give us a 5-star rating and a positive review. And tell your friends about us too. It'll help grow the podcast. Visit Steve's website at frombeneaththehollywoodsign.com. The executive producers are Steve Kubine and Nan McNamara. Executive producer and post-production supervisor, Lindsay Schneble. This podcast is part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to their other fine shows like The Box of Oddities and The Shallow End with Schneble and Toth. Copyright 2024, all rights reserved. That's a wrap.